They said there was somebody from Jordan streaming earlier. I didn't know you were streaming, so that's nice when people that aren't near centers can do that. It's also important to get yourself in front of teachers. You know, in person can be helpful as well, but it's nice when they can stream. More and more they're streaming, and yeah, sometimes there's a lot of people on like that.
Last night it was 9.
It was up to 16.
Oh, so you got a small amount. Okay, some centers. One center is where they had like 100 people streaming from. So I can't remember where. I think in France or something. Yeah, that was great. How was your lunch? Joyful? What kept it joyful? Any interesting things from our discussions? Discussions you're having with people? Any interesting insights or things? That anyone cares to mention?
Whipped cream. Oh, yeah. So I got whipped cream on my chai, and I wouldn't normally do that, but, you know, since it's my last day.
Okay. There you go.
I had to go for the whipped cream.
Mm.
Go for it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I find that, and be careful with it, because, you know, whipped cream every day on the chai is going to maybe cause your death sooner due to high cholesterol, who knows. But, you know, I really try to place myself in being, you know, we're human doings, right? We get into the doing, the activity, What about being? And I really like the place of meditation. Instead of trying to meditate, I prefer to move into it as far as being in meditation. And so I'm going to be in meditation right now. And it's a different space in my mind. So if it's my last day, how would I like to be? How would I like to be rather than what I'm doing? But what's my attitude about each person I encounter and this person, and some people, and some of you have been with actively dying people, so you know that those trivial little disagreements about things and little worries, they're not really concerned with that. So if we could kind of understand we have a problem arising, what am I going to do with that? So how do I want to be around that problem? How do I want to be around this situation? How do I want to... You know, life presents a lot of minor little irritations and situations, and then there's some major ones. So I like to place my mind in that context. Okay, you know, there's sometimes I need to, like, buckle my seatbelt. Okay, this is going to be a little bit more of a ride, or this one more relaxed, yeah. Or this is pleasant, this is different. That, yeah, that's interesting. And while we're waiting for people to, any particular questions, any comments, anything coming up from what we've been talking about, perspective, death meditations, precious human rebirth, anything like that? Any interesting insights from your meditations of joyful situation, not joyful, please?
Some trying to word this so it makes sense, but we were talking about perspective and trying to have the perspective that everybody comes from a good place, and that people are inherently attempting to do their best.
Okay, not everybody comes from a good place. That's not what I said. I said, first of all, I believe in the fundamental goodness of everyone based on their Buddha nature. We can talk more about that. But I think everybody's doing the best they can with where they're at. They don't all come from a good place.
Okay.
I don't think I said that. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're absolutely right. You did not.
And I get specific. And the reason I get specific is It's interesting what people hear me say, and they'll say, you said, you know, that all dogs are stupid, you know, and I'm like, no, I didn't, you know, like, because we hear different things, and then we kind of, and process it back. And when I was new to the Dharma, I was excited about it, and somebody would ask me about it, a friend that was a little bit skeptical, like, what are you doing? And I got all excited and then tried to say something about karma that I had no idea. And then it was really confusing, and then they're like, what? That doesn't make any sense. You know, that. So that's why sometimes I'll say, did I say that? So sorry, please, go on.
No,
thank
not
you.
At all. But now that you say that, so if you do take the position that everybody's trying to do the best they can, well, if they come from a good place, then that's wonderful. And it might not always be enough, but that is still a good intention.
Yeah.
But if they come from a bad place, then so they're trying to do the best they can in a bad way?
I don't think they're trying to do the best they can. I think they're doing the best they can. Like, this is it sometimes with, it could be with under-education, with a lack of education. And here's the big one that is operating, I believe, in everyone with an ordinary consciousness, a misknowing of reality, a lack of understanding of emptiness. We're all operating, every ordinary sentient being means you're ordinary, all of those beings, all those minds are operating from fundamental ignorance. So that's why when I'm doing the best I can and I fall flat on my face and totally muck up and hurt all these people, like a terrorist, right? I have to have some compassion to understand that they misapprehend reality, just like me. That's where it comes from. That's where harm comes from. That's where hostility comes from. That's where attachment comes from. Pride, jealousy, envy, fear, anxiety, depression, laziness, it all comes from ignorance. So we're not trying to do our best. We're doing the best we can based on the ignorance. I'm not saying the best we can is okay, but sometimes that's it. I mean, somebody blows themselves up to take out all these people, and you go, that's the best they can do? Based on a level of ignorance, they might think that's a good thing to do because they don't know. Do you understand what I mean? I'm just being more specific like that. So please.
So I can comprehend that and grasp that, and when it comes to my own practice, I can see a lot of the examples that you were using were, you know, simple things like being cut off in traffic and maybe having the immediate reaction and saying, oh, that person is a jerk and whatnot. And that's, I don't think I really struggle with that in my life because I might have that arising, but I usually catch myself and I can, that's fine. But then when you feel that things are happening on an intentional level where people are outright lying or doing something that's, you know, affecting a large group of people, maybe with death and war involved and, you know, corporate wrongdoing that's really affecting millions of lives or the future of this planet. So in terms of my own practice, I can take the perspective that these people are coming from a confused state and all this, and I, you know, try to have metta and not to be aversive to that individual and have understanding. And that I can totally wrap my head around that. That's fine. But what about the act? It's still happening. Don't we have some obligation to make this a better place?
So then I ask, how do you want to do it then?
Well, I'm not certain because my first thought was, of course, that unless it is pointed out that what is happening is actually wrong, other people might not even become aware of it. And then you are the person pointing out that, hey, you know, that person's actually a liar. They're doing some real harm. Is that something that, as a Buddhist, you do?
So I would think, in general, and thank you for your comments. It's really helpful. I think it's a good point, is, you know, there's a lot of problems on the planet right now, and there always have been, by the way. As long as you have fundamental ignorance, there's going to be problems. And, you know, so with delusion in the mind, it's simply an imbalance in the mind based on fundamental ignorance. And as long as you have that, you're going to have sentient beings. ordinary beings, meaning unenlightened beings, as long as you have that, you're going to have delusion. As long as there's delusion, there will be suffering. And sometimes it manifests in somebody blowing themselves up, and sometimes it manifests in a leader of a country lying. Sometimes it manifests in somebody going into a place and shooting something up, and sometimes it manifests in somebody breaking down because their husband just left them for their secretary or something, or attached. You know, it manifests in all these different delusions that come up in the mind. So you could say to somebody, the husband that leaves the wife, and you could say to him, that's not okay. What are you doing? You have a family, and you're destroying your family, and what are you, crazy? You're married. Like, you made a commitment, but the karma's operating, and this is what he wants to do. So whether you say something or not, it doesn't matter, right? You know, so the thing is, you have to do your external work, but it's got to be informed with some grounded internal work. And I don't want to do it with extra delusion. But you can do external work, and there's a lot you can do. So in the face of, if it's governmental things you don't agree with, you can write letters to congresspeople. I have an app on my phone that gives me the main talking points for the main issues going on at any given time, and who my congresspeople are and how I contact them. And I send things, and I go in and I write down, and then I send a thing, and I send an email, and you can do that. You can go to marches. Some people like political marches. I go to marches. Okay? I make a sign. Okay? I make sure my sign is not overly negative. Like, it's positive, not trashing somebody else. And when I go to the march, I make sure my motivation is love and connection, not to get back at somebody. I try to be kind. I try to make eye contact with the cashier when I check out at the grocery store and ask them how they're doing. But I try to drive like a decent human being if I'm in the car. So I feel like that's really, me trying to live with all these atrocities. You know, I can't change those atrocities other than fundamental basic values and me being an example of love and kindness if I can. And I can't do it every moment because I'm a human being. You know, sometimes I'm tired and I lapse and and other delusions pop up. But what else are you going to do? I'm supposed to be teaching in Israel at the end of the year for 3 months. And I'm a little apprehensive, frankly. I've been to Israel many times. I have family members in Israel, and they've been wanting me to do this program for a while. And I couldn't do it with my dad when he was alive because it was too long to be away. It's a mixed bag for me. I like the program. The guy running the program is a very decent, compassionate human being. It's a very good program to create more of that in people's minds. And I believe in that. But then there I am in this container that I'm not sure I'm in agreement with the direction of the government that's in control. And how will that affect me there? I don't know. So I think we do the best we can again, I don't know if others of you have solutions of other ways that you'd want to go to battle, the coronavirus. Rinpoche is quite, what's the word I want to use? Current. So he immediately had prayers for the Australian fires. He doesn't leave it and like there's nothing. Coronavirus, there's prayers you can do. One of them is the basic prayer Rinpoche wants us to do every morning. The method to transform a suffering life. Are you interested in transforming your suffering life? So there for me is a qualified, highly realized being who's saying, well, so people go, well, how's this prayer going to, because we're not habituated to understanding the prayer's work. We just don't have that habit in our culture. People do on Sundays go to church and things, and then things got kind of screwy with the churches a little bit, with some people's churches, and they weren't sure. But I have developed over the years faith in Rinpoche through my own checking, asking him a simple question I could follow about my practice, following his advice, and liking the result. And then I asked another question, then followed the advice, and slowly over time I'm totally convinced that, he's in the good club. I'm moving in that direction. He's helping me shortcut my path to enlightenment. So he has this thing. It's just a few pages long, these prayers. They can show you from the center the method to transform a suffering life. You can download it. You read it. Then there's some mantras you could say. And then he has these two other short practices, short. Initially, we're unfamiliar. We look at it and go, well, God, that's a long mantra. What am I supposed to say? Slowly, and after 2 weeks, you got the mantra. You say it in your car. And then he's so kind to us, and he says, well, if you can't do the whole practice, then just say the mantra with some feeling. He knows us. He knows we're lazy. He knows we'd rather play, I don't know, what do you play on your phone? What are some of the things? Somebody told me, what was a woman playing? Bejeweled or something like that? Is that one of them? Something with jewels falling. Anyway, we're good with that, right? But not to say a mantra that, and these two mantras he gives you, Black Manjushri practice, very short practice, and the other one used to be secret, Vajra armor. Well, they protect you from cancer. They're practices you do if you are very, very ill. Those are practices Rinpoche gives people if you're ill. So do you not want to be doing those? Anyway, they don't take much time once you learn them. So again, he right away jumps in. Here's what you can do for the coronavirus. People say, what do you do? I want to do some. There it is, right? Right there. It's on the FPMT website. You can go right there and download it. And I feel like that the internal, that mechanism has some effect on my external manifestation of what I'm doing in the face of stuff, like what you're doing. And then try to educate yourself, depending on what areas you're interested. We have our education programs. They're fantastic. A lot of them rolled out here at the center. You have this incredible scholar, Geshe Gelug. Doesn't get much better than that. Then you have other teachers here, and you have all the programs. It's wonderful. But then there's your own personal area, like Andre's working with the prison population. Thank you. You know, fantastic. So some people are deciding Liberation Prison Project, great way to help. I've been involved a little bit with that, and then I'm involved in some diversity work where I live. We have this very sad, impoverished city next to me, outside Philadelphia, called Chester, Pennsylvania, mostly African American. So we get together, our communities, trying to build understanding, you know, in ways of helping, and it's educated me. So again, you're out in the world and you see an episode of racism, and I'm better able to respond now from hopefully a kind place in my heart like that. So I don't know if that answers.
Thank you.
It's hard to know, you know, unless other suggestions, other ideas of things that you're doing that. So I imagine you're all doing a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff out there. And another thing, please be careful. I'm so happy to see some younger people turn up. Thank you so much. Because there's some centers. This center has younger people. I tend to draw a lot of younger people in certain courses and retreats I lead. There's some centers I go to. It's all 60-year-old women. And I don't know where the center's going to be in 20 years. Right? When you look at it, really, it's so. What was I going to talk about? Oh, so with anybody in general, but younger people are a little bit more geared to social media, possibly, than an older generation. And be careful, because there's a lot of garbage there. So what happens is people get stuck in the negative stuff that's being posted, or they get stuck in, when people post, a lot of people, and I'm on social media because I'm often posting a flyer for a program I'm to help the center. I don't spend a lot of time looking at it, but when people post, it's when they're on the Hawaiian vacation, right? 2 weeks a year. They go, you know, and you see that, and people go, oh, they went to Hawaii. They're not posting you the 50 other weeks when they're at their, you know, grinding job, and they hate their boss, and they're cleaning up their kid's slop, and they don't often post that. My cousin does. It's wonderful. No, she's so real. She just gets right in there about, you know, I love it. But they post, so it makes other people feel like, oh, I never take a holiday. I don't have the money to go to Hawaii. Or it's just really negative stuff. So I filter all, I don't look at that stuff anymore, the negative. And I've actually unfollowed people that just post negative and political diatribes that are just trashing people. I just unfollow them. I don't need that in my mind. I don't want to look at it. There's a lot of good stuff going on. So you can choose what you want to focus on. And I love that we've the only newspaper left in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer, is our daily newspaper. There used to be two. The newspapers, as you know, in print media are disappearing. So I get the Sunday Inquirer just to support the print media. And on Sunday, they've now added a section. I mentioned this maybe last year. It's called The Upside, and it's all good news. And I was so proud. I wrote them. I was so happy that they did that. I said, thank you for telling us about the other side that is there, but unnoticed and unreported, underreported often. And they have lots of great stories, incredible stuff people are doing, ways you can volunteer. I'm now kind of connected to this refugee organization, driving stuff for them. And it's great. So there is, this stuff is there. It's just a matter of where do you want to focus your mind? We have those choices. So it's important to keep, again, to keep the mind buoyant and engaged in a positive way. So, yes, please. Is there a water shortage here? I'm always joking. I fill my cups up to make sure I get enough liquid, and sometimes somebody brings me a cup of tea, and it's like half a cup, and I'm like, is there a water shortage or something? Like, what's the... Yeah.
I misheard you. I thought you actually were asking for space at the
time. Oh, no problem. No, I usually crank it up. No, I'm joking. This is fine. Thank you very much. This is wonderful. Please.
Well, Venerable Amy, I just wanted to thank you for giving us permission to focus on the lighter side. Because sometimes you feel obligated to, oh, I need to know about this. I need to know about everything. But it's nice to be able to go, it's okay to just give yourself a little bit of lightness. So I appreciate that.
Sure. No, you're welcome. I mean, look at politics. It just swings one way, and then it swings another way. And then these people don't like these people, and these people don't like these people. It doesn't change. It doesn't. I mean, occasionally there's something like the Berlin Wall coming down. But so much of it is based in greed and ego. So how much of our mental energy do we want to spend on that? I mean, I like sometimes going to a march because there's kind of solidarity if it's somewhat positive and you're kind of counted as a number to say, like, this stuff matters to people. And I, you know, but again, you have to find your own forum. But I do think over-focusing on the negative stuff, I know it doesn't make me happy. So I've kind of reduced that. I want to go on with some other pillars. Pillars of joy related to the mind more so. And I want to talk about three together. There's actually two, but it relates to a third that's not necessarily a pillar of joy. Humility, humor, and humanity. Humility and humor are the second and third of the eight pillars of joy, qualities of the mind, basically. Humility and humor. I mean, we're very familiar with these words, so that's not a problem. The word humility and humor and humanity all come from the same Latin word for earth or soil. Humus. I'm not really pronouncing it well. It might be pronounced humus. Like that. Humility literally brings us back down to earth, sometimes with a thud. So true arrogance really comes from insecurity. Needing to feel that we are bigger than others comes from a nagging fear that we are smaller. And there's a Tibetan saying, wisdom is like rainwater, both gather in low places. So the humility, you know, which you could see as kind of I'm lowering myself, okay? There's a lot of wisdom in that. And you know people that are very humble. I find it a really admirable trait. I've never been very humble, so I really kind of look at that and marvel at people that are really humble like that. And there's another saying, when the spring bloom comes, where does it start? On the ground. It comes from the ground. Again, so this place of heart, and we first started with humility. Does it start on the hilltops or down in the valleys? Growth begins in the low places. So similarly, if you remain humble, there's a possibility to keep learning, to be open and curious. Okay, so let me, a little bit more about humility. And I love using this word, curiosity. When you have a delusion operating and you get really angry at somebody, and maybe it's just in your mind, but maybe you can't control your mouth and suddenly you say some snippy remark to them. We're no longer children in the sandbox, meaning usually with kids, the mind would get angry, took my toy, then I'd say, you took my toy, jerk, right, and then you'd hit. Some kids would hit. So we don't do that anymore. But sometimes this still is functioning. And then some people say to me, but it's still in my mind. I was still angry. Okay, fair enough. So if you get angry, and let's say, or maybe you're really attached, and your kid comes in to visit you from university, and you're all excited, and you're planning, and you're looking forward to this for weeks, and now they're there, and now their first night, and they're going off with their friends. And you're really upset, and then you say some snippy remark to them, and now they have a fight, and you're always like that, mom, you know, and then boom. And there's the beginning of your visit, not at all where you wanted to go. So this happens to us all the time. So instead of getting down on myself for the lapse. Well, I just had and one of my friends, I love this, at the center, we were at the center in Vajrapani, and she just contacted me last week, and she was one of the founders, one of the real elders of the community, and then I became the director, and it was a really rough job for a while, and every week we had a community meeting with 15 to 20 people, so that the elders, who were no longer involved in the running of the center, could kind of monitor what we were doing with the center, the staff, even though they didn't want to help on site. They wanted outside jobs to make some money. So whatever it was, some policy she didn't like. And she's a small woman, and she stood up across the table from me. And all of a sudden, she started yelling at me, which was really out of character from her. She's not like that. But she really was laying into me, and I was kind of like, whoa. And I'm watching her thinking, what is going on? Like, she must have had a really bad day. And she stopped in the middle, caught herself, and she looked at me and she said, I'm so sorry, I'm having a klesha attack. So klesha is delusion in Sanskrit. Like, she just caught it and realized, whoa, it's not what she wants to be doing at all. So instead of getting down on yourself and beating yourself up that I really messed up, and what if you identify, you become aware, well, I'm really angry right now. And what if you get curious instead? What's creating the anger? What's going on? What am I thinking about right now, myself or others? What's a trigger for this? What triggered me? Did I have over expectations about my kids' visit home? Didn't I know they were going to want to see their friends? Am I setting myself up for failure? Like, curiosity analyzes. Analytical meditation in a healthy way. I think we deserve that. I find the curiosity really releases me from beating myself up. Get curious about why that delusion happens to be surfacing. Why you don't feel safe right now. Why you want to yell at that guy. Why you want to give somebody the finger in your car. I find curiosity, it's lighter. It's lighter. And it can tip us over into the next pillar, humor, coming from the same root, up from the earth. Humor, okay? And I'll just add, so humor, like humility, I said, comes from the same root word. The lowly and sustaining earth is the source for all three of these words, humility, humor, and humanity. Is it any surprise that we have to have a sense of humility to be able to laugh at ourselves, and to laugh at ourselves reminds us of our shared humanity. Shared humanity. For me, it's a great, those two words, shared humanity, it's a great context for me to do, I think all of us to do the work we're doing, shared humanity with more joy. Because I realize whatever I'm doing, thinking, and saying, it spills over and it affects each of you. As long as I'm around people, and even if I'm on the mountaintop at Laudo, and I feel like I'm alone there, there's people serving me at Laudo. There's four people living there, and they will deliver breakfast and lunch, and when I come out of retreat, they're there, and how I come out of retreat and what I want to talk about and be and help them. But it has some kind of a ripple effect also on the planet, I think, whether you're alone in retreat or, but most of us are around other people a lot. So there's that constant ripple effect. So I know that what I'm contributing is spilling over, touching you. Wouldn't I like that to be a little bit more peaceful and gentle and happier? Helps me to contribute to creating the joy, coming from joy. And you know some people in your life, they're always up, and you love being around them. They call you, and you want to get together? Yeah, sure. And then there's other people, you don't so much want to get together with them because they're more challenging. So and here's the third pillar, humor. So we have perspective, humility, and humor. If you start looking for the humor in life, you'll find it. And if you stop asking why me and start recognizing life happens to all of us, makes everything easier, including your ability to accept others and accept all that life will bring. Excuse me. So I want to talk a little bit and intersperse here in growing humility, and I've found also in being able to laugh at myself and really more and more understanding shared humanity and moving yourself away from why me? Why me? Why am I the victim? Why did this happen to me? This is unfair. But also removing yourself from pointing the finger outwards. Somebody else's fault. Somebody else is doing this to me. Brings me into, in the Lam Rim, refuge and karma. These are all still some passages of the scope of the lower capable being. Somebody who's motivated to practice, because the Lam Rim is divided into these three scopes of motivation. Someone who's motivated to practice because they're afraid of what may come in the future, that it may be much worse. You know, maybe a different realm that's much more suffering. Okay? So if we're worried about that, we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Throughout your study and practice, you may want to read about the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And understand, for instance, the Buddha jewel, because they talk about the three jewels of refuge, or the triple gem. I think most of you are familiar with this. But the Buddha jewel on a conventional level is Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha that we're familiar with. There's a big tonka of the Buddha that with the orange robe in the middle. We're familiar, he lived about 2,600 years ago, Indian prince, and got enlightened and basically perfected his mind. And as a result of full enlightenment, he has no fear. He is omniscient, all-knowing, and he has every positive quality fully manifest in his consciousness. So wisdom, compassion, loving-kindness. That sounds pretty good to me. So again, but you can explore more qualities of the Buddha, okay? I'll give you an example. He has a skillful means, because he has no fear, he has a skillful means to free others from fear. He has great compassion for all living beings, whether they're close to him or not, whether they help him or not. That's what the omniscient mind is like. Okay? They fulfill the aims of all living beings, whether these beings have helped them or not. Okay? Now, when I say fulfill the aims, and I say, but I want to get enlightened, so why can't they enlighten me? Because you have your own karma operating. Okay? We still have to participate in our karma. If they could enlighten us, they would. like that. But they can basically, like for me, if I seek advice from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he's very willing, you know, very happy to help me. You know, provided I follow the advice after I've asked him. Don't waste his time by asking and then I'm not going to do that. It's crazy, right? So, and then you can look at, here's a mind that knows, if you're ready for this, this is why they say the Buddha mind is inconceivable. The Buddha mind knows your past, present, future karma, but knows that for every living being in all world systems simultaneously. That's a pretty big mind. Like, could that be something I could seek support for more suffering, to protect me from suffering? For me, after checking and read, you know, I would think so. But you can check yourself. What else protects you from suffering? Explore that in your own life. Explore that in your own life. Okay? If you found something else, we have temporary relief of temporary coping mechanisms, but they're temporary. Are they long-lasting and really protect me? So you want to check the Buddha Dharma Sangha. There's more things you can read like that. The ultimate Buddha jewel is the omniscient mind, the all-knowing mind. Because imagine if you know everything. That's why you're not afraid, because you know if somebody's going to attack you or not attack you or break into your house or steal your car. You would know what's going on. You know what everybody's thinking. That's a lot, yeah. The Dharma jewel. Dharma jewel. The Dharma conventionally is our philosophy, all the Buddhist teachings. Ultimately, the teachings on emptiness, teachings on the nature of reality that free us from more suffering. So again, you'd want to look at the different levels of the, you know, understand the teachings of emptiness. Start with thinner books on emptiness until you understand that. Learn how to meditate on emptiness. Get to courses on emptiness. There's a lot you can find also online like that. That's the real refuge, emptiness. That cuts all the suffering for you once you have the proper view of reality. And then we've got the Sangha jewel. Conventional Sangha jewel could be on some level a spiritual community like Kadampa Center. A little bit more specifically are monks and nuns. And an ultimate Sangha jewel are those who've had a direct perception of emptiness. Arya Sangha, they call them. What, you're an Arya being once you have seen the truth like that. Noble being like that. So Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So you would explore again a little bit more, can they really protect me? And I would say, it takes a passage of looking at your own coping mechanisms I mentioned and understanding a little bit more about refuge. And one example, I've given this example before that made me think about my refuge. And so years ago when I lived in California, I booked a flight to see my family in Philadelphia. And in the old days, if you remember, 2 days before you had to call and reconfirm your flight, if you remember that, if you're that old, like. And I called, and they said, your reservation's been canceled. So it was like, what? And whatever it was, they were able to make the reservation again at the same price. And I'm like, who called? I didn't call. Anyway, they're like, okay, it's all set. You're all set. So I called the next day just to check. And they said, your reservation's been canceled. So then I thought, you know, is this a message from the universe? Like, maybe I shouldn't be on the plane, and you know, people have these things happen. So I happened to be, Reba Rinpoche was living in California at the time at Lama Zopa's house, about an hour away from our center. I was very close with him. So I went to see him, and we were talking about something else, but I happened to bring this up, and I said, you know, Rinpoche, I'm supposed to fly back to see my parents, and da-da, and the flight was canceled. And I don't know, is there any problem? Should I be on the flight? And I'm worried, you know. And then he just kind of chuckled, and he said, well, if you have proper refuge, it doesn't really matter if the plane crashes or not. And it really made me think about it, because I thought, you know, and I've been on planes with terrible turbulence and issues. One of them had to land suddenly for a problem. And And so I go now to the refuge in those situations. In a situation I'm not comfortable or tremendous suffering's coming, and I feel a great resource there in thinking about my teachers, my specific teachers, that I've checked up thoroughly and are quality and qualified teachers, and then think about the Dharma and like the real refuge, to call on that instead of screaming or getting upset or, you know, going to the box of chocolates and eating, or people do recreational drugs, or all the different coping mechanisms you have don't really solve the problem. So I have found that refuge is an incredible support, and also humbles me in a way of realizing, you know, what I can develop in my consciousness, what's not developed yet. So it gives me this openness to want to learn more, to develop those qualities that the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha have, like that. And then also, and I like the humor, because I like when he said, you know, if you have proper refuge, it doesn't matter if the plane crashes. And it was amusing. It was a little startling, but it was also amusing. Like, Tibetan Buddhism has this lightness of being, and the lamas are often trying to get, we're trying to get enlightened, right? Not enheavied. So there is that lightness of purpose I find most of the lamas have. You see that in Geshe Gelug. And, you know, the Tibetans, their demeanor overall is a very positive, non-complaining, generally. Their personalities are a lot like that. I mean, having lost their country, reading, I read one of my teacher's books, Geshe Sopa, who was one of Lama Zopa Rinpoche's teachers as well. He was a professor at University of Wisconsin for years. And he passed away now, but I forget the name of his book. Does anybody read his book? Biography? It was a beautiful title, but it was about his escape from Tibet, his childhood. And leading, you know, obviously coming from quite a simple life, but this whole wish to practice Dharma, that was all he thought about. And when the communist Chinese invaded, and they escaped, and they fled the monastery, over this horrible trek to get out of Tibet over mountains, you know, you have the Himalayas, and getting out, and how they didn't know, and they were waiting to hear that they could go back. But you're waiting and waiting, and the horrible thing, ending up in a refugee camp. Like, you don't know that somebody's going to take over your country for good. Can you imagine? Like, we don't know anything like that. So reading this whole book, it was so humbling for me of like, and all the things, and he never complained. Like, they just kind of got on with what was the next thing they had to do. And the Tibetans have this, Tibetans and Sherpas have this really unique kind of sense. They're different cultures, but they really, I found, having done a pilgrimage with six Sherpas in Rinpoche's family once for a couple weeks across India, and just seeing they never once complained. You know, and that's why I was joking. So when we do the pilgrimage, there's an orientation evening the first night when we meet, and then I give a talk, and one of my topics is, you know, the effectiveness of non-complaining. Because we love to complain. We in the U.S. of A., okay, especially there's not just Americans go, but other folks go, and we're pretty spoiled, and we lead pretty comfortable lives, and suddenly, you know, you're somewhere and there's no toilet paper or there's no water, or how do you want to deal with it? Pilgrimage is not about comfort. It's about getting out of your comfort zone and practicing and things like that, you know. And so I talked to them first about, you know, it doesn't really help to complain if things aren't going well. And it really seems to help cut that for people of just, we're just going to figure it out, and we're going to help support each other on the way. And humor is a great balance for that. I find there's always some, in an inappropriate way, humorous places we can go. And Tibetan Buddhism is very much like that.
Like a waking dream.
Thank you. Like a Waking Dream. Thank you. That's the book. Like a Waking Dream. Biography of Geshe Zopa. Geshe Lundrup Zopa, who was an amazing, amazing being, amazing teacher. Yeah. It's a nice title, like a waking dream. He's also the one, if any of you have studied the Lam Rim Chenmo, the Great Treatise of the Lamrim. So there are commentaries in English. They're big maroon books. There's five volumes. Fantastic. They're teachings that he gave, and they're brilliant. Because he knows our mind. He taught for 40 years at an American university. So he knows how we think. So the examples, everything, it's very current. And it's very digestible for us. The Lamrim Chenmo is very dense and difficult for people, and he made it so delicious. So I really recommend those books, commentaries on the Lamrim Chenmo, that you can find out, thank you, in the bookstore. So in talking about these first three, perspective, and I want to come to the fourth one of, and what I wanted to talk about, humility, humor, is in talking about the fourth, acceptance, okay? This is huge, and this leads into the fifth pillar of forgiveness. I find they go together, but I want to just right now start talking about acceptance. Now, do we end at 4 p.m.? Okay, we could have a break, but then everybody's going to be standing outside a broken bathroom. But anyway, we'll take a short break. Okay. That's our karma. Okay. With acceptance, Shanti Deva has a famous quote that His Holiness often talks about. And this is often what I think about in the nature of, thank you for your questions, of what do you do in the face of all these things when you really want to say to somebody, you know, that's not true, or God, you're so stupid to support that person, or things like that is, so why be unhappy about something if it can be remedied? Excuse me. And what's the use of being unhappy if it cannot be remedied? And His Holiness often will say, if there's something that arises, our practice is whatever in front of us at any given time, and something arises that's not okay with you, right? This happens all the time. Some situation could be small, could be bigger, okay? So quickly use the computer banks of your mind. I'm often evaluating something. Can I do something? Ask yourself, can I do anything? But please, I always add with compassionate wisdom. Have a good motivation. You know, it's not about, well, that guy's such a jerk, and so I think I'm going to tell him the right thing because I really think it will help him, but you're really angry at him. You be honest with yourself. So with compassionate wisdom, and then check up quickly. Sometimes you have to do it assess very quickly. Can I do something? Yeah, I can. Okay, then act. Then figure out how to do it with compassionate wisdom and act. And sometimes I make an assessment, and I realize, no, there's nothing I can do like this. And then can you let it go? A lot of times we can't let it go, and we revisit and revisit. That's a practice for you of letting, period. Put the period at the end. That's the end. Let it go. So again, once we see life in its wider perspective, pillar number one, once we're able to see our role in its drama with some degree of humility, pillar number two, and once we're able to laugh at ourselves, number three, humor, we come to the fourth and final quality of mind, the ability to accept our life in all its pain, imperfection, and beauty. Okay, acceptance isn't the opposite of resignation and defeat. That's what's unique. It's not the opposite of, acceptance is the opposite of resignation and defeat. Some people say to me, well, you accept it, so you're just kind of letting it go. And no, I've checked. It's not about resignation and defeat. It's realizing I cannot do anything about this. Or I can, and I'm doing it. The coronavirus, I would like to help people, so I'm doing my practices. The practices Rinpoche recommended. Right? The Australian bushfires, well, we have a lot of centers in Australia. So I did the practices recommended, and I sent some messages to the centers, and just so they know you're not alone. We're thinking about you. I'm on the other side of the planet. I've been to one of the centers in Australia. So I sent messages, thinking of you, sending prayers and love, hope you're all okay, hope the fires don't reach anywhere near you, I hope everybody that you know is okay. hope they can be extinguished soon. You know, just so there's solidarity that, you know, I used to like to get that from other centers. We're thinking about you. There were when I was in California, there were fires. So I'm not resigning myself and feeling defeated and just, oh, there's nothing I can do. I've already checked. Something I can do. And even small things, I think I mentioned this in here before, so if I'm repeating, just let me know. In the face of racism, you know, I've done all this work over the last 25 years of educating myself, and I was at we used to hold some diversity conferences at Vajrapani years ago, and what happens is all these people show up, all different colors, you know, white included, and then I noticed some of the white people said to some of the people of color, after we're voicing all these things and people getting very honest and real and in a safe context, and some of the white people said, okay, you know, we understand, we hear what's going on, so tell us, can you teach us how to be? How do you want us to be? It's interesting, isn't it? And my friends of color said, no, we're not going to teach you. You learn what you have to do. You educate yourself. You know, so together we kind of put it together, and it was powerful in educating myself of, and learn. It was better than them telling me what to do. I found it much better, but I could work with them and say, okay, you know, I've read these books now, and I know, and last night I was in a restaurant and this happened, so this is what I did. Like, what do you think? And they go, okay, I can work with you now. Like, you're, and they go, that was good, but here's an adjustment. That was great because we could do it, but then I had to learn on my own. And through the process, I mentioned, so I was in a bakery. Did I tell this story in the bakery? A few years ago, I was in this bakery, and it's in a little foo-foo upscale food mall. I don't usually go there, but I was on the way back from a doctor, and I knew my dad likes these cakes they have there. I went in, kind of open food mall, but the bakery had a little high counter. And I'm standing in front, and I make my little order, little thing, the cakes, and that was it. But I ran out of cash, so I gave her my credit card. And I'm putting my paper and the credit card back in my wallet. Somebody came up next to me. I didn't really focus on them because I'm... And I hear some order being placed, whatever, a little bit. And then I somehow, the magic words came up, which got my attention, which made me look. And the magic words were, can I see two forms of ID? Okay? So what, nobody asked me for two forms of ID with my credit card. The white girl. Okay? But I turn because from the work and the reading I've been doing, people of color get that all the time when they give a credit card. It's not something we ever think about. Right? So it made me, so suddenly I look and there's this woman of dark skin next to me. And the person behind the counter is white. And you have a second to respond. So there I am. There's a typical situation. Comes up. And there I was. And I'm like, what do I do? Oh my goodness. What do I want to do something. Is it my place to say something? Is it my business? Not really my transaction. Not really my business. And then I went, this is racist. It's my business. Like, this is not okay. I decided. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I decided. For me and my value system, my core in here, I went, act. Okay, now the second thing is, how do I want to act? Because if I attack the woman behind the counter, that didn't work for me. Alienation, and I'm thinking, okay, humility comes in. So there I was, okay, and you only have a split second. Like, what do I say? Like, how am I going to say it? And then I decided I would purposely stutter, and I would try to be as in, like, non-accusatory, and all I could get out was, what came out was, and I looked right at the woman behind the counter and I said, is there a problem? Because I was just there. Nobody asked me, is something wrong? Like, that's why we would want to see two forms of ID, safety issues, trust issues. And she looked right at me and turned beet red, which told me, you know, it was not okay what she was doing, and she knew it. And then she said right away, no, everything's fine, and took her credit card to charge it for the $4.95 of the transaction. But now what I don't know about the situation, because I'm not omniscient, is I don't know if that was a policy of her boss, that everybody of color, you have to get two forms of ID. Had they been ripped off by a predominance of people of color? I didn't know that. Like, did they have statistics? Something to think about. I don't know, you know. Did she own the bakery? Was it her policy and her bakery? Or was she just racist? I had no idea. But I just had to say, and she'd know, and the transaction. But I think it kind of is going to give her pause again, the white woman, to think about doing that. And then I left and put my, and then the woman with dark skin came over to me, and we had a nice interchange, the two of us. And so again, you try. But not, it wasn't my arrogance that I'm better than her. I've been racist as well. I think we all prejudge, don't we? So hard not to prejudge. You see somebody fat or thin or tall or poor or with a shabby coat on or what kind of car they drive. We judge sometimes. What's that? 60-year-old women. The 60-year-old women club. Yeah. You know, I mean, I say that as 60-year-old women. That's why I said it. We're the ones holding up all these centers. It's us. We're doing it. We are a very powerful group, right? Right? So if we could just get, you know, a 60-year-old woman elected president of the United States, it might help some things, okay? It's about time that we had our day, right? So it's amazing to me how many other countries in the world can put women in the front seat. Not the U.S. of A. It's so interesting that, right? Not yet. So, I mean, countries like Pakistan, the Philippines. We're talking like, huh? Like these countries, you know, it's, I mean, there's more to it than that, but still, it's pretty interesting. So just thinking about, so then acceptance comes. So I can't fix her racism. I'm trying to fix my racism. That's all I can take care of is my mind. I'm not undertaking care of anybody else's mind. I can't do it. You can give somebody information like that. So acceptance comes from that space. It's not about my resignation and defeat, but there's some things that you can't control. You can't control like that. Only can I control my mind. So acceptance, whether we believe in God or not, allows us to move into the fullness of joy. It allows us to engage with life on its own terms rather than rail against the fact that life is not as we would wish. It allows us not to struggle against the day-to-day current. The Dalai Lama told us that stress and anxiety come from our expectations of how life should be. How many of you are living in the shoulds? What you should do. You're shoulding on yourself, right? You deserve more, you deserve better than that. I try to get that SH word out of my vocabulary. Not always. But, you know, we do have this thing about how it should be. The planet shouldn't be like, they shouldn't be doing that. He shouldn't be allowed to do that. He, you know, doesn't really help. Like that. But when we're able to accept that life is how it is, not as we think it should be, we're able to ease the ride, to go from the bumpy ride of suffering with, you know, that life with all its suffering, with all its stress, with all its anxiety, with all its dissatisfaction, to the smooth ride, okay, with greater ease, comfort, and happiness possible. So it's the same thing of, you know, I have friends that one of them started leading an indivisible movement in Oregon. This is a political, a liberal political movement in Oregon. She did a fantastic job. It took over 2 years of her life, and she could barely, almost broke up her relationship, and she was just constantly on her phone the entire time posting this, rallies. She did a great job. She's very charismatic. And very dynamic and smart, and it was eating her up alive by the end. I'd done political work like that. So when she told me she got involved for like the first time ever, it was exciting. And I said, oh, and having been there and done that, and I was really like, it's not the best use of my time right now as far as waking up. And I felt like for my place to help beings the most, to be of the most benefit. But that's my decision. about my life. So she wanted to try it. I said, fantastic. How wonderful. And I would comment on a Facebook thing to give it bigger attention. Wonderful. I'd make a comment, fantastic. I was so happy to see that or whatever. And then after 2 years, she just totally burned herself out. She couldn't have a vacation. And her boyfriend once begged her, and he said, okay, you know, I just need, you know, 2 days with you not on the phone. Like, can we go away for 2 days? So what she did is one time she called me, and she said, I've snuck out. I've snuck away because I had to post these things for our meeting, and Barry's going to kill me, you know. And I'm like, really? And finally, she burned out, and she's done, and she told them, and they got angry at her. Okay? So, again, that's not really a helpful scene, but what would happen is there was a lot of anger in what some of the folks around her were doing. Doing this stuff with, you know, and kind of attacking other people. And it's like, I don't know if that's really the route that railing against the system as opposed to finding. I find that harmonious dialogue across the aisles, creating healthy relationships with somebody that disagrees with my views is one of the most powerful healing techniques we can do on the planet right now. I think we all need to work on that. I find that's been working really well with me. And to counter my railing against, like wanting to change and wanting to fix the things. So there's people in my community who are extremely conservative. I would imagine in this community as well. And I've become friends with some of them. And once you're friends, you can find some other shared humanity with them, things we like to do, things my next-door neighbor, for one, extremely conservative, always puts his political signs out on his front lawn, works for the Republican Party in our county. There's nothing wrong with that. He's a great guy. He's a little younger than my dad. He's lived next door since I was about 14 years old with his family, went to high school with his son. So, again, my newspaper being delivered, I phoned him yesterday. I didn't get him. I left a message, and I got a voicemail back from him. Yeah, no problem, Amy. I'll take care of your newspapers. I'll put them through your mail slot. I'll check on anything with the house. I'll let you know. Thanks for calling. He's my friend. We take care of each other like that. So, you know, if there's something, he came over when my dad passed away last summer. My sister and I were there. He came, you know, he's sitting in the living room with us talking about reminiscing and stuff. So I have that connection with him. So if I ever want to talk to him about some belief system, and he started to ask me something about Buddhism, sitting in the living room, that because he's open to that now, because he feels safe with me. That's how we create peace on the planet, that kind of harmony. You know, is it going to happen overnight like that? No. But neither is railing against the system going to fix anything. Or blowing yourself up with a bomb doesn't fix the system. It seems to create more adversity and more anger. So, again, please check your involvement with anything. How do you work with somebody difficult at work? How are you dealing with it? By avoiding them and in your mind building up hatred to them, looking at their every flaw and only focusing on that and only seeing that? Or am I kind of stepping back, getting a bigger perspective, you know, being able to notice, well, they're a mirror because I kind of do that thing too, and then being able to laugh at myself and then realizing they're a human being too, you know. I'd like people to respect me. What if I try respecting them? They don't always do everything the way I'd like, and actually I thought he was kind of being dishonest with that other person, and I don't like that quality about him, but he does this part of his job really well. You know, we're not perfect beings like that. We all have some issue that we're working with. Excuse me. So there's so many of the causes of suffering in the same vein come from our reacting to people, places, things, circumstances in our lives. Okay, reacting rather than accepting. When we react, we stay locked in judgment and criticism often. Negative criticism. We stay locked in anxiety and despair, denial and addiction. It's impossible to experience joy when we're stuck like this. Acceptance is the sword that cuts through all of this resistance, allowing us to relax, to see clearly, and to respond appropriately. So one thing I want to go into with acceptance, how do I conduct myself? And I want to talk a little bit about karma, the law of cause and effect, moving through the Lam Rim. This is usually the last section of this first scope, motivated to practice by a fear that things are going to be much worse for me when I die. So I want to learn how to conduct myself. And everything contained in this scope is precious human rebirth with a fundamental basis of guru devotion, serving in a proper way the advice of a qualified teacher. But precious human rebirth, so I've got a good buoyancy to my life, realizing I've got a good value and opportunity here to practice. Understanding the situation's quickly passing away, death and impermanence, and everything changes. That's the true context of life. And when it does change, there's a chance I could end up in a much more suffering state. Well, that's terrifying. So we are not a God-fearing religion. I'm not using the terror to paralyze you. I'm using it to motivate you. So basically, what do I want to do to protect myself from more suffering? Take refuge. So understand the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the three jewels of refuge. Why? So I can aspire to developing those qualities in myself. Okay. But in order to do that, I have to learn how to conduct myself. And that brings me to the teachings on karma. Do you see how it kind of fits together? First scope, the Lam Rim. Everybody with me? Okay. So, karma's too intricate to understand unless you have a highly realized mind. Meaning, well, why does she suffer with this debilitating illness? What caused that? You need to be clairvoyant and understand the sophisticated nature. What we can understand are a few things like the characteristics of karma. And then we're going to take a little break. There's four characteristics as a review. What are they? Four characteristics of karma. What do you remember?
Karma is definite.
Karma is definite. Thank you. Karma is definite, and that means if you do think or say something positive, you definitely get a result of happiness in the future for you. If you do think and say something negative, you will definitely get the result of suffering for you in the future. Like you plant an apple seed, you definitely get an apple tree. You don't get an orange tree. Think that. Karma is definite. Number two.
It's yours. I don't remember the word. It belongs to you.
It belongs to you. So that's another one. Let me go to number two. Number two first. Anybody remember?
Karma expands.
Karma increases. Karma expands or increases. A small positive deed that I've done right now, I had a good thought to buy somebody flowers, and I don't get angry to destroy it. Anger destroys a lot of merit and positive energy, positive seeds in your mind. But I've dedicated properly and haven't done anything to destroy it, and that little karmic seed, positive seed, will grow and grow and grow into something, a massive amount of good karma. The same with the negative. So you killed an ant intentionally. It's a tiny insect. Without any regard, you were really happy you did it. You intend to do it again like that. And you don't do any purifying practice. And it will grow and grow and grow and be like killing an elephant later like that. So don't freak out. You know, I killed many insects as a kid. Okay. Your motivation is a huge factor. Okay. And as a kid, I wasn't a Buddhist. So I didn't know that killing was a bad thing, including insects. As Buddhists, we try not to kill insects as well. It's your own personal decision, okay? But it will create some negative ramification according to Buddhism. So I didn't know. I was obeying my parents. My mom say go clean the, my mom would say clean the porch out. In the spring, I'd go out with the vacuum with great glee and, you know, get all the spiders and all the other things. I didn't know. I killed a lot of yellow jackets on the playground in fourth grade between my hands because they were stinging my friends at the seesaws. Good motivation to prevent my friends from getting stung. bad activity killing the yellow jackets. I didn't know any better. Fortunately, I got stung finally and I stopped doing it. Sometimes I think, was that Rinpoche? Trying to get me there. But when you don't know, it has less of a negative effect. But once you know, okay, but you can do purification practices, Vajrasattva. And there's other purification practices. Something I like to do every night because it just minimizes whatever negative stuff I did. I mean, because I don't have a direct perception of emptiness, right? So that's always wrong in my mind. Okay, but, you know, I'm working on it. So I try to minimize that every day with some purification, effective purification practice. Best I can do right now, like that. So karma increases. Number three, Celia? Yeah, you don't experience a karma that somebody else created. Okay? I'm not going to experience the results of somebody else's activities. It's only my own body, speech, and mind. Like that. So you're in a plane crash with somebody and you blame the guy next to you. Well, you're bad karma that we're having a plane crash. No, it's in your mind as well. So there is collective karma. People experiencing something together. The bushfires in Australia, the collective karma of those people in Australia, the coronavirus in China, collective karma of the people in particularly that one city to experience that. There's collective karma of armies, people that inflicting harm on another group of people collectively may come back and be in another group that's being tortured together as en masse. As a group of people like that. Could be, but maybe not necessarily. That's why, because karma is so intricate. Number four, fourth characteristic, is over time, the karmic propensity will come to bear fruit, will ripen, and will come to fruition over time. Okay? How can you affect the outcomes? By, if you have a positive outcome and you get really, really angry without doing any dedication practice, that can destroy the positive seeds. If you have a very negative cause created, I can purify it before it ripens. So I might have the cause to have a malignant brain tumor, but I've purified enough and I end up just having a really bad headache one day. Could be like that. But over time, it'll still come to fruition depending on if you've dismantled the cause. Four characteristics of karma. And again, you need certain ripening factors. And all of them have to be in play in order to have a fully ripened, heavier karma. And so, for example, how these actions, how they take fruition is you have a basis, which is the object you're doing. If you're killing, let's say the basis is this insect. That's who I'm going to kill, the object of the action. My thought involves three things. It's basically the state of mind, to simplify. But I've got a recognition, a motive, and a delusion, an operating delusion. So it's what's your state of mind when I want to kill the insect? So on one level, I could say confusion, ignorance, because I don't think killing insects is a bad thing. One, I could say attachment, because I don't want ants in my kitchen. A third one could be anger. It's usually one of the three poisons, the delusions operating. Anger, because I can't stand these horrible insects. Like that. Sometimes we have a combination of all three. Then you have another component, your deed. I kill the ant. I kill the insects. Okay? The fourth completion of the action is where the insect dies before I do in the state of killing. The insect dies before I do. That creates a heavier result in the future. If it's missing one of those, like suicide, because in suicide you don't die, the person doesn't die before you do, you die at the same time because it's yourself. So it has a slightly lesser, you know, fruition it will come to. It's still heavy, suicide. Still really, really bad to do because it's harmful. So you could look at all of these in relation to activities we do with our body, speech, and mind. Body, speech, and mind. So what we try to practice is our own 10 commandments in Buddhism called avoiding the non-virtuous, the 10 non-virtues, and practicing the 10 virtues, or what I would call ethical conduct, ethical conduct. So let's look at these. Three of them relate to your body. Three are things you do with your body. Four are things you do with your speech. And three are things you do with your mind. We avoid these 10 non-virtues. Number one, three related to the body. Let's explore these. What do we avoid? Number one,
killing.
Basic Buddhist premise is to avoid harming others. Number one. To be a Buddhist, you really need to abide at least by that one. Okay? We avoid killing. And we would practice a guideline of saving life, rescuing life, taking care of life, respecting all life forms like that, with a mind in particular. Second one, a body, we avoid
stealing.
And we would basically try to take care of our belongings and the belongings of others, especially if we borrowed something. Okay? Number three of body, that we do with body, we avoid
sexual
misconduct. Thank you. Like adultery. And we would basically cultivate loving relationships, respectful, healthy relationships, especially intimate relationships. Okay. Four that we do with our speech. We avoid, number one, and these are in order of heaviness. Number one,
lying.
Speaking lies, not speaking the truth. And what we would do is counter it by speaking meaningfully. Speaking truthfully, like that. Sorry, not meaningfully. Speaking truthfully, speaking the truth. Number two of speech. Nope. Divisive speech. Divisive speech. Saying things that break people apart. Instigators do this, like that. Ethically, it would be saying things that bring people together. Okay. Number three, harsh speech. Yelling at people, cursing at people. Ethical guideline would be saying things that genuinely flatter people. You have to be authentic and genuine. Saying nice things to people, like that. Number four of speech. This is the least heavy, but the problem with it is we do it all the time. Gossip. So we avoid gossip. You would speak meaningfully on this one if you're practicing an ethical guideline. It doesn't mean you always have to speak about the Dharma, but it's related to that, ideally. Basically, what I like to say is before I'm speaking, I try to think, will this have any benefit for the other person? You know, is there any benefit right now in me going on and on and on about the latest novel that I read or the plot of the movie you just saw, and the person's not really interested? Don't you have some people in your life where they have to tell you every twist and turn of the, you know, and you're like, okay, or I'm going to see that movie, don't tell me, but they go on about, you know, he dies in the end, right? I'll never forget years ago, my mom and my brother and I went to a movie at a local movie theater. If you remember this old-time film with Paul Newman called The Verdict. Okay, he was a lawyer, he was an alcoholic lawyer, and it was a good movie. It was a good movie. And it had nothing about him dying in the end, okay? But we walked out, my brother's very tall. We went to the early show on a Saturday night. And the late show, when we got out, was all lined up, waiting to go in. And you know how people look at your face? They want to see, are you crying? Oh, there's a lot of people crying. You can tell what kind of movie. Everybody's crying, and, you know, or you see people come out all happy, yeah, it's a great movie, and you might say, great movie. So my brother gets to the middle of the line. He's a very funny guy. And very loudly, he says, he dies in the end. Like, I thought people were going to kill him. I mean, whether he died or not, he like ruined the movie for them. Like, they're waiting for him to die, and they're like it was just, and my mother's like, why did you do that? Like, it was so funny. I'll never forget. So we always have a joke in our family. He dies in the end, you know. So, avoiding gossip. Now, gossip isn't just talking about people behind their back, but it's, again, going on and on, going on about the last football game that you watched and how they're, you know, people are all juiced up about tomorrow. I don't know if you're into the Super Bowl. I forgot about it until Condra was driving. She goes, oh, there probably is something Super Bowl. And I went, oh, yeah, Super Bowl, right? Of course, my team is not in it. If they were, it would be different. It would be different for me. And then there's three we avoid with our mind. We avoid, number one.
Greed,
thank you. Most people get stuck on that one. Greed or covetousness. And what we would cultivate would be being happy at others' good fortune. Rejoicing at others' good fortune. Number two, we avoid?
Hatred, aversion.
It's like that harmful intent. It comes from hatred and aversion, but it's actually harmful intent or something we call malice. Malice is slightly different than hatred. So it comes from that. We would avoid, and what we would cultivate would be having positive, happy thoughts about others. Others good, you know, wishing them well, wishing others well. Okay? And the last one is we avoid
wrong views.
We avoid holding wrong views. And this is more ultimately about cultivating emptiness, having a direct perception of emptiness. But I explained wrong views is also thoroughly dismissing the Dharma. That's garbage. I can't believe His Holiness says we're going to die. That's garbage. It's different than saying I'm not sure about reincarnation. So I'm just going to set it on the side for now and go into the other parts that I like. That's different. 10 non-virtues we would avoid. And I find that through this practice, it's about me taking care of my mind. And so acceptance has a little bit more ability to rise up rather than me feeling that I'm going to fix everybody else. That's my plate. Like, I need to tell that guy, and I can't believe she's doing that, and he's so stupid. It's not about that. It's me taking care of my mind. I can accept, and I've evaluated. Is there anything beneficial I can do? And sometimes the most beneficial I think I can do is close this and transform my mind, work on my mind. Because sometimes those things are mirrors for my mind, and I look out, and I go, oh, I'm judging this person. They always do that. I'm like, I do that. They're not that different than me. Okay? Let's take a break. 15 minutes. Because we finish at 4, and that's actually soon. What I'd like you to do in the break, 15 minutes, is hold your liquid. Sorry. Try to meet somebody new again. I'm sorry because I had interrupted your conversation before, so you can continue. Talk about the 10 non-virtues. How do they operate in your life? Are you, did you notice when I mentioned the 10 that 2 or 3 of them popped up for you really prominently? Oh, I do that. What techniques do you think could help counter your practicing that? And what do you think motivates you when you fall into one of those non-virtues? It's helpful to understand the motivation, because then that helps us not do it so much anymore. What's the cause of that? And what do you think about the 4 pillars, the first 4 pillars we've been talking about? Perspective, humility, humor, acceptance. Which of those is not really operating right now in your life? Which could be accentuated? How are you doing with some of those? Okay, thank you. That sounds like the plumber is here. What a fun job that is, huh? Removing obstacles. There you go. I have a lot of respect for plumbers, right? Like,
gratitude for
them. Yeah. Enjoy their work. A lot of them, you know, we look at it and think, what a poo-poo job, right?
Yeah.
But they really enjoy it.
Yep. I mean, it's kind of this thing of helping things run smoothly.
Yeah.
Like when you think about it, like people are so grateful when they leave. They're like, oh, thank you so much. Like, because it stops your entire household when the plumbing isn't working.
Sure.
It's a major thing of your house. Like electricity you can kind of deal with, but plumbing, after a day or so, it's really problematic. So it's interesting. Plumbers, they really have a good thing that they do for us. So maybe we won't do the meditation. I think it's a little loud. We'll do that tomorrow. Any comments? I want to know questions from We just went through the first scope of the Lamrim in relation to the four pillars of joy, also connected. Any comments, insights, anything from your discussion? What do you think about the non-virtues? Yeah, Andre.
Having a conversation with a wonderful friend, and we were talking about the 10 non-virtuous actions, right? And so, you know, what I think we realized together, certainly what I realize is that there are certain ones that just so kind of easy for me to do. Not kill, not a problem, right? I don't even want to kill the little roach. I'm trying to save his life and stuff like that. So I try to find ways to get him out of the house without killing him and so forth. That's not an issue at all. Stealing, you know, done that, been there. I have no desire to take anything that's not mine anymore. Those kinds of things. But when it comes to the mind, those are the most difficult ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
I may not say mm-hmm. it, but I'm thinking it.
Yes.
You know,
yes, that's
like,
right.
How do I stop the thought?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. And
yeah.
That's kind of my question.
How
do I stop the thought?
Because people do say, like, I was able to stop my speech, but I was still really angry at the guy. Like, it was still in the mind. So I think slowly through – I don't know if I have this on right.
Yeah.
I do. Okay. Okay. That's right. Okay. So I think slowly over doing the practice, when I asked you, are you aware of what motivated you to feel greedy? What motivates you to want to wish somebody ill? Like when I understood the motivation a little bit, and the more I could understand with karma, understanding how I'm going to perpetuate this, like learning more and more, I don't want to keep revisiting if certain suffering keeps happening to me. There's a pattern, like I'm getting myself more into this. So continuing to understand that. But it takes time to change the mind like that. So again, we first start curtailing the body. Like I've been able to refrain from killing the insects. And then I notice I'm pretty good about my speech now. So that last part is the mind. So I think it's a whole combination of checking your motivation, what motivates me, learning. I find more in retreat, I understand the way my mind works. So I understand the pockets I run to hide and kind of. And then there's patterns from the past that I'm working to subdue. So through purification practices, it starts quieting the mind and quieting that tendency in the mind. So it's a combination of several things. The beginning is learning, the awareness. I mentioned last night, awareness. And then let's say you feel greedy or you're having a negative thought about somebody, and then the awareness is, well, you know that, so after I have the awareness, I realize that doesn't really work, right? Me having this thought, this isn't where I want to go with this person. Okay, so then the second thing was try something different. So what if I realize I'm really challenged by this person, I'm building up so much negative stuff in my mind around them, but what if I try to focus on some positive quality they have. Some positive quality they have. Right? There's got to be something positive I can find. At least their Buddha nature. And, you know, slowly through that process. And then introducing that. And then if I find it's settling my mind, calming my mind a bit more from having more negative thoughts about the person, which are created by more negative thoughts about the person. So I'm kind of cutting that pattern and then do it again. Do it again, do it again. I mean, I give an example, and I know we're all politically different in here. I'm not, but because there's been somebody who's been so forefront of our leader of the United States. Now, I don't know how you voted and how you feel about him, but a lot of people I know don't feel positively about him. And so one thing I said is, but, you know, he's like Teflon Don. Nothing sticks to him. Like, and that he's got some extraordinary karma that all of these other things that people have resigned from office for, he doesn't, and I'm not saying this glibly, I'm not kind of saying I'm saying he doesn't have to. I think it's extraordinary. it's extraordinary karma he's got that, you know, and on he goes. It's an interesting thing, and I could see I'm kind of like, he's just got this quality that can somehow do. I find it, I'm fascinated by it. So I'm not disgusted or kind of, you know, I'm just kind of like watching where it goes. It's like, it's so interesting. And having been in politics, you know, it's up and down, and you know, one day you're great and everybody loves you, and the next day you're in the gutter. It's like that. It's not, you know, nothing is not changing. Changing all the time. But so there's you can find a positive quality like that. If there's somebody that you feel like everybody thinks she's like this, and not everybody thinks that. Not everybody thinks that at all. So if you have even somebody in a workplace, I've heard this where they say, but everybody hates my boss, everybody feels that way. You can find something positive about even the most adverse people are there. And then could I, remind myself about that positive thing again, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and it's like, okay, nobody's perfect, but I can see some of those qualities shining through rather than just me being held hostage again by these negative patterns in my mind that I'm just perpetuating, you know. And sometimes I need to go away from the person. If there's somebody really that's creating a lot of disturbance in my mind, take a break from them. You know, there was somebody at work I was working with who was very difficult, and then I had a holiday for a week, and I really was like, oh, it was just nice not to be in their space for a bit. You know, I know I'm going to go back and work with them, and it's how they are, but, you know, you get a week's break, get a little peace, and then eventually if it's something's really bad, you could change jobs and look at that over time, or people have had issues with neighbors, and eventually they moved. It wasn't exactly what they wanted, but they realized for peace of mind, they needed to do it, and also things change. I was just teaching in Liverpool, England, and the people that I stay with live in an apartment, and there one night I was there, and the people in the apartment above them were having this incredible fight that you could hear. I haven't heard a fight like this, I don't know when. Like, it was so dramatic, and we're in the house, and it was like a Saturday night, and I didn't know if somebody was going to harm the other one. Like, it was a man and woman, and I said, well, I'm like, is there anything we need to do? And they said, oh no, they do this all the time. They get drunk. Saturday night they got drunk. They come home and they said, we're living with this like a lot of weekend nights. They are just, you know, they said they've heard things smashed across the room, broken, but, you know, the next day they see them and they're like, hi, you know. Like, they're not, nobody's dead, nobody's injured, nobody's bruised, doesn't appear to be bruised, but so they've, you know, very, also English manner, decided not to do anything, you know, not to intervene, it's private. And then this time I came and I said, so how's it going with the couple? And they said, they moved. So you do purification practice, and suddenly they're gone. It really, like, people say, well, they'll be like, no, they're always there, and the boss is going to be there for 40 years. And the next thing you know, and the boss got transferred. I've heard it happening. You never think it will happen, and the next thing you know, it's happened. So, but it does take time. And let go of expectation. I've been doing Vajrasattva for 3 years, or, you know, I've been doing, let go of the, just keep doing. Keep doing, it's having an effect. It is having an effect. Like that. Anything else?
I didn't quite understood. You said if somebody does something wrong, commits a crime, it doesn't stick to him, so he doesn't get convicted. You can always find a good thing about it because he's burning his karma. That's part of finding something good.
Okay.
When something bad happens, it's hard to...
It is hard. It is hard, but for me to stay angry and negative about what they're getting away with holds me hostage. And I'm not really interested in that. Like, I guess I see some people, very liberal tendencies, very disturbed by President Trump. you know, very, very upset and very round and, you know, and it's like, I don't agree with his policies at all, right? But I'm not really disturbed by it. I've seen, I've seen this person in, these people, but I don't need to be disturbed by it, you know. I will vote. I always vote, and, you know, and I can write my letters and do my things and think that's my personal decision, and I don't need to, you know, pressure anybody else into doing that, or that's my business. Like that, but I don't have to let it disturb me the way I see some people on both sides. You know, my cousin, and this is so interesting, he posts a lot on Facebook, and I like him. He's a good guy, and he's a smart guy, and he married my cousin, basically. So this is somebody who unfortunately did not have the background I had of the family, so going to college wasn't an option for him due to finances, you know. He would have really benefited, I think. And so as a result, he has a low-paying job, and his family really struggles financially. And, you know, so, you know, and then as a result, so he posts, and, you know, he's a big Trump supporter. So what comes up on his site at one point is about the idiot liberals. Okay? So I joined in. And clearly, Steve, you don't think I'm an idiot. Because he knows me, okay? It's easy to hate people from far away. Please, to quote Brené Brown, move in close. My next door neighbor. I could go past his house and look at his Trump sign. Actually, he didn't have a Trump sign. Okay? That's how he, you know, that's how even conservatives are supporting our president. We wouldn't put that sign up, but he had other signs of, and I could just go by and make a blanket judgment on him. Oh, he's a you know, right? But no, I know him. He's a decent, wonderful person I care about. I'd do anything for him. He'd do anything for me. So my cousin, I chimed in, clearly Steve, because he knows me, and he goes, no, I don't think you're an idiot at all. Like suddenly we're dialoguing, and we start dialoguing because we know each other, we're related, we're connected. And then one of his friends chimed in with something I was saying about with these statistics about this is what's happened and how. And then they joined in and said something really, really mean about me, really negative about me. Like, and then Steve wrote back, it's my cousin. And that shut them up. Like, why does it have to be? So if we aren't know everybody and are friends with everybody, we're going to stop doing that because you don't do that to your friends. That's why we really have to create these healthy relationships, especially with other, especially with that person, other. That's our responsibility, I think, as Mahayana Buddhists on this planet. I think it's part of our job. And it's scary sometimes. It's scary to go in with somebody. You're, you know, some of these diversity meetings, and we have people from all walks of life come in and different things, and some of the other groups I've been involved with that, you know, so it's very interesting, I think, trying to dialogue. And I like where I'm living now because I'm exposed. You know, I lived in California, and then at one point I lived in San Francisco, the progressive pocket of the United States. I was so out of touch. I thought Michael Dukakis was going to win that year, the president. He was clobbered. I didn't know anybody voting for anybody else because I'm living in San Francisco. Right? Now I'm on the pulse. I knew Trump was going to get elected. And all my liberal friends said, no, look at this poll, look at this thing, look at the 538 report. I said, I don't know, you guys. I'm in the pivotal state, Pennsylvania. In fact, it came down to us, suburban women of Pennsylvania. That's me, right? And we blew it. We went the wrong way, right? And it was amazing. Well, I say the wrong way, sorry. But, I'm voting for the big heart, okay? I'm voting for the heart. But it was so interesting, and I knew, and I said to these friends of mine, I said, everyone around me is voting for Trump. So I don't know what report you guys are looking at, but my county in Pennsylvania is not going well. Now my county has switched. We've had a few years. We've tried it. And now the county council, you ready for this? 5 seats, county council. It has been Republican since the Civil War. All five seats are Democratic now.
What?
We elected two a few years ago, and last November the other three went Democratic for the first time since the Civil War. So it swings, but it hasn't swung in a long time. So suddenly I'm like, the Delaware County Council is Democrat, like it's never been. It's just, so that's interesting that somehow, and we have a tremendous amount of immigrants moving into our area, which I love as well. It really keeps it, so that's very interesting. That's having an effect. Not that all of them vote, but some of them do. And so it's just interesting to see. So I was just talking about, I'm choosing not to be bothered by it, and I'm finding curiosity if I get poked with something. Like, how come you think differently? How come you think enough to attack somebody? It makes me curious. Not attacking them and not being like, I'm better than you and I'm more educated. And I'm curious. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know what my cousin Steve is thinking. It educates me. You know, and I hear him, too. When you're suffering and you're trying to pay your bills and you're afraid you're going to lose your mortgage and your kids are struggling and you're trying to send them to school and, you know, he's trying to fix his broken down house, and it's rough. It's rough. But I just think Congress as a whole has not been functioning for us. Both sides. It's like we're paying them to do a job, and if you don't do your job, you get fired. Right? So, you know, take responsibility and vote for the people that you think are going to, you know, act for us. And there used to be, when I worked in, there was much more relationships across the aisle when I worked in Congress. There were many more people from both sides that were friends with each other. It was much more civil, I found. Now, I don't know, it's a really weird kind of scene there, which is just a sign of a degenerate time, perhaps, like this. So we've got to work on our minds. Got to work on our minds. Sorry, I shouldn't really talk about political views, because I know it's not really appropriate, I think, to say that, because everyone has their own views on that. But I've watched sometimes Rinpoche talks to me about politics because he knows I was involved, and he'll say different things about, I remember him talking about Obama, interestingly enough, and he just said that he had a really big heart. He felt like, as a candidate, somebody in that arena, he said, you know, a very kind heart, kind-hearted person. I found that interesting observation. When Rimshi doesn't really know as much about the players, and sometimes they ask me about somebody. That. Anything other? Yes, please.
Venerable Amy, in regards to curiosity and perspective, what would you say about protecting our minds? Me being familiar, myself being familiar with what I know disturbs me, and if I have a choice to not subject myself to it, like the news, what would you say about that?
To not watch the news, you mean?
To not do things or avoid things that I know disturb me.
Sure. That sounds healthy.
Versus trying to find the way to put it in perspective.
I think there's a balance, you know, but I think some things are so disturbing. In that case, if it so disturbs your mind, better to step back and not expose yourself to it until you feel ready to then engage and say, well, can I put this in a better perspective like that, you know?
Okay.
So slowly, slowly, but I think we do need to protect our minds with what we're looking at on the computers and technology, what kind of sites you go to, what kind of news vehicles, what are you watching on the news, where do you get your, what are the news sources? Because I used to work for a political magazine, and it was all about where do you get the information. So every time somebody says something to me about some statistic, this is that, you know, and I always say, well, where did you read that? Where did you get that information? Because it depends on the news source. It's all slanted based on. So I think definitely, what kind of books do you read? What kind of magazines do you look at? Who do you hang out with? What are your friends' interests? Things like that. It's not that we're cutting non-Dharma friends out of our lives, okay? But again, I had some friends that were in a scene before I was a nun, long before I was a nun. I was a new Buddhist. And, you know, after work at night, we'd go out to the bar, have some drinks, smoke cigarettes, whatever and go dancing and things like that. And then after a while, I realized I wasn't really having that much fun in the bar. I didn't really want to drink very much. And I didn't like smelling like cigarettes when I came out. So, and I noticed, you know, so I was kind of watching that, and then I started to cut down on when I would go with them. And then they got a little upset, you don't come out with us anymore. So then I said, no, it's just that I'm not so enjoying the bar. And then a few of the people I was closest with, I got them to go to a different activity with me. You want to go for a walk in the park today after work? Oh, yeah, okay. You know, you want to play tennis? Do you want to go for a bike ride? Do you want to go to a yoga class? Something like that. And we would go do something like that. And so the ones that kind of came along with me remained friends. And some people just didn't. And we just didn't have that much in common anyway. Like that. So slowly, you know, you're creating your own peer group that hopefully will be more conducive with like-minded values, right? And that protects your mind, too, because of what they talk about, what they're interested in, things like that.
Yeah. It kind of goes with what you're saying. I find myself having to kind of assert what I really want and what gives me meaning in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's letting go of those who don't quite fit. Not, I mean, in a very just, I'm not out to hurt anyone. It's just, I'm going this way.
Yeah.
You know? And I think the place where I'm at right now is I feel really good, you know. But sometimes I feel really alone because I'm out in that new place. I'm sorry, just choking up. And I'm hanging tough. I am. I just want to know, I know it's patience. I know it's trusting. And I go for refuge. What can you say to that? I mean, if he's got anything.
Yes, so one thing I would comment on is the terminology hanging tough. So why do we have to hang tough? Why can't I admit my vulnerability, that I feel alone in my new venture? Turning that corner when you meet the Dharma and then you find a wonderful center like this, and you're making some new friends at the center, trying to connect, and where it fits in your life. I find that corner, that was really challenging for me. It's a very challenging time because I've got all my other friends and my other part of my life that was working and doing okay and all that, and now I found something else, and everything kind of flipped upside down. So the refuges, I felt like Rinpoche held his finger out and said, hang on, right? And I've been hanging on ever since. So when it flipped upside down, it wasn't a falling down, it was like a falling up. And what it does is kind of shakes out all the gunk that you don't want anymore. But I have no context of anything else because you're not hanging on to anything. So I would just let that arise and go, wow, this is scary. This is scary. And how wonderful the Kadampa Center's here to try to orient a little cushion. So I think just acknowledge to be with that gushy place of like, well, and then slowly, and I didn't do this either of any dramatic thing with people saying, I don't want you in my life anymore. And some of them are family. So I just would limit the time I'd spend a little bit. And when I was with them, be totally with them and enjoy that space. But no, it's only a couple hours right now. And that's okay. And then slowly, as they might see that I was improving, then they started to get interested in what I was doing. They don't have to be Buddhists. I never expected them to be Buddhists. But if I started to tell them what I was doing, initially when they're not interested, they're not really hearing any of it. What's she talking about? Some weird spirituality and this place she's going to? What are they indoctrinating her? You know, they're probably brainwashing her and telling, you know, And so slowly, I just did my thing quietly, you know, and they might say, oh, she meditates. Okay, yeah, I do. And then it might be some years later, but then they saw I was really peaceful in the face of this. My life was going really well. I was really happy. And that starts to get people's attention. And then they go, where are you going? Can I go to a talk with you some Sunday? Can I? So that's kind of how it worked for me. It was a slow kind of evolution and things. I mean, I actually did move to a new place, which was California from Washington, D.C. So that was dramatic, where everything was new. I was much younger, And that gave me a course of making new friends in it. But there were still friends that were going to the bar, drinking, and, you know, and then I realized, I don't really want to do that at this point. No, there's nothing wrong with that. It just wasn't what I was interested in. So I don't know if that helps to slowly. And then you can expand from meeting people here slowly. And other alternative clubs I know people have joined where they get out of one pattern and then they realize some Sierra Club thing because they want to be outside more and do more exercise. They meet people through that can be helpful than an older pattern you might have been doing of going home after work, putting the TV on and getting your bag of chips. And, you know, so that way it kind of got you out of that pattern. And, you know, there's other things like that. There's meetup groups people do that, you know, for different interests as well as the center. So is that helpful? Is that helpful? Okay. So let's finish because it's after four. And I really like to thank all of you for coming and coming back and asking your great questions and really trying to decipher, you know, to figure out how the joy works. Let's continue. So for your evening, think about these exercises. Just think about the four pillars we've worked through so far. Work with the 10 non-virtues. It's neat to kind of pick two a day. Pick two a day to really go after. You know, if you find, exaggeration is a form of lying, by the way. Taking what is not offered is a form of stealing. If you ever, you know, got your meal at a restaurant and you realize they left the soup off and you don't tell the wait person and you decide to pay and leave, that's stealing. It's a type of stealing. That's where we get in trouble. We're not going to steal a car. But we get in trouble with that little underneath activity. So maybe you're going to hone that area of those things that you're doing. You know, when is this opening? And I'm realizing I don't really need to say that. It has no benefit. Right? Slowly, slowly. And then we'll continue tomorrow. And there's a session 10:30 to noon. I might diverge a little bit from this course, and then we'll come back to the course. We start again at 1:30 to 4 tomorrow. But or you can come from 10:30 to noon, like that. I'd like to dedicate the merit from the Gold Prayer Book, please. And thank you once again so much. Page 235. I'd like to take all the positive energy we've created. I'd like to invest it in our being able to wake up more and more with a joyous mindset, setting the mind in a more positive experience that will help benefit our practice, taking us to full enlightenment so we can be of the most benefit to all living beings. And also, please continue the exercises tomorrow morning when you're waking up practice. See what gets it started for you. How does it feel to do it? And then slowly you can expand that and add on to that. Thank you. Page 235. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha. Lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. Just as the brave Manjushri and Samantabhadra too realize things as they are, I too dedicate all these merits in the best way that I may follow their perfect example. Page 244, short long life prayers. And wait, I want to give you one other. Okay, page 240, the first paragraph. This is Rinpoche's favorite dedication now. Rinpoche says if you don't dedicate with emptiness, you've missed it. Okay? Due to the merits accumulated over the three times by myself and all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, which are empty from their own side, may I, who is empty from its own side, achieve the state of enlightenment, which is empty from its own side, and lead all sentient beings who are empty from their own side to that state as quickly as possible by myself alone. Page 244. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the Siddur's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Thank you very much, and I hope to see you tomorrow. Have a good evening.